From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Barely had the blood dried along the Hudson River in Lower Manhattan on Tuesday when President Donald Trump began politicizing the truck attack that killed 8 people. The alleged perpetrator, an Uzbek green card holder named Saifullo Saipov, is in custody. And after announcing that the diversity visa lottery system was responsible, Trump first considered sending him to Guantanamo and then simply tweeted that Mr. Saipov deserved the death penalty as soon as possible. In the wake of the recent Las Vegas shooting, in which a white man named Stephen Paddock shot 500 people, killing 59, Trump and the GOP were shockingly silent on policy proposals or ideas to prevent future such tragedies. But because a Muslim immigrant man is at the heart of the New York attack, conservatives are gleefully suggesting human rights-violating policy proposals. My guest is Paul Gottinger. He is a U.S.-based journalist writing on war, civil liberties, racism, and terrorism. His work has appeared at The Daily Beast, Middle East Eye, Alternet, The Real News, and Shadowproof. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
So first, the idea of putting Mr. Saipov into Guantanamo was raised. This was something that people were afraid would happen under Trump. And indeed, Trump floated the idea only to back down. I guess it's not absolutely clear why he might have backed down. But what he said on his Twitter feed was that it would just take too long of a process. It would be too long drawn out. How dangerous is even the suggestion that we should be putting new prisoners into Guantanamo?
Yeah, I think it's pretty dangerous. A lot of us were pretty worried what would happen if there was a so-called Islamic terror attack under Trump, and it seems like some of our fears are coming to pass. Unfortunately, he did put him in the kind of normal criminal justice system, but there are these very kind of ominous threats that he's making that they're considering him an enemy combatant. He tweeted that he should receive the death penalty. These are very strange and disturbing things, kind of reminiscent of more of a dictator than a democracy. I think my main message just about all of this stuff is it's time to end the war on terror, both abroad and at home. It's brought nothing but destruction abroad, and it's kind of ripped us apart here at home with this idea that there's this other, this foreign entity that's waging war among us. It's creating this idea that we can't trust anyone. There's an outsider group. And it's really, it's having a lot of really destructive, it's leading to a lot of destructive impulses. Trump is certainly an expression of that. And these, the things that he's saying here are, unfortunately, they're held by a large number of people. So we need to take a look at what's behind them and really kind of get off this carousel of bans and bombs and try to find a different solution for what is terrorism and why is it occurring.
Mr. Saipov is from Uzbekistan, a country that was not on the list of countries that Trump wanted to ban visitors from, the so-called Muslim ban. He is Uzbek, Uzbekistan is a Central Asian nation. And he jumped on two ideas regarding immigration, one being the diversity visa program, which I understand was actually created to help Irish migrate to the United States legally. And then he's jumped on this idea of chain migration. Would any of that have really stopped any future attacks? I mean, if he stops the diversity lottery tomorrow, what is it really going to do besides simply, continue the xenophobia in this nation?
Well, I think so. Obviously, a lot of the attacks are this individual was radicalized in the United States, and there's we could talk about that if we wanted to. But I think that the visa process is as it is quite they really pry into every kind of avenue of your life, and they don't just hand these things out to anybody. The people that I've known who've gotten them or people who have migrated to the U.S., there's quite an intensive process, background search. And a lot of these people are professionals. They have their lawyers and doctors who come to the U.S. and really strengthen the U.S. economy. This is something that a healthy country needs to do to grow and create. Silicon Valley is certainly going to be hurting if they can't bring the top talent engineers into the country. This is a part of what's made the country strong and its economy really sound. So to shut that off, I think it was really going to shoot ourselves in the foot. But I, as you say, the terrorist attack would have occurred should he not have allowed, you know, if he's going to end these diversity visas. This has already happened long ago. And a lot of the countries that are in the ban, the latest terror attacks are not from people from that background. I think the larger point is that, one of the major threats of terrorism is not by American Muslims. It's happening by white people and mass shootings, particularly white men. There was just a report in Huffington Post the other, I think yesterday, about this white group called the Crusaders that wanted to attack Muslims in Kansas. In Minnesota, where I am now, there was a mosque that was firebombed. There was a mosque in Quebec that was attacked. So terrorism is not just something that American Muslims or Muslim immigrants are doing here. This is something that is much broader, and I think something that we have to look at with a broader lens.
And when we look at the odds of what causes deaths in the United States, dying of a terrorist attack by a foreign-born person is extremely low on the list of things that kill us. Higher on that list is gun violence, which, of course, as I mentioned, after Stephen Paddock's shooting in Las Vegas, there was not a peep from the Republican Party about addressing something that we know would have made it harder for Paddock to get so many guns, which is basic measures of gun control. Trump had been very gleeful to politicize similar such attacks as the one that happened in New York that have been happening in Europe. We've been seeing many more of these sort of truck mowing down people using trucks as weapons in Europe. And he was jumping on the bandwagon of, calling for stricter immigration rules because of what was happening in Europe, saying we don't want that to happen in the US. And the minute that I'd heard of what had happened in New York, I thought, this is exactly what Trump has been waiting for, right?
Absolutely. He certainly has kind of jumped on it to exploit it, to immediately kind of push his political ends, calling, to end visa program, as you mentioned earlier, strengthening bans, strengthening extreme vetting, people who are trying to get into the country. I mean, State Department figures, I think, show that people from the so-called Muslim banned countries are having a very difficult time getting into the country if they have very legitimate visas. So the whole thing is, it's causing a lot of problems, and he's certainly using it to try to push his political ends. And as you said, with the Las Vegas shooter, I mean, there's a segregated justice system. We certainly know this well when it comes to people of color when they deal with the justice system, but it also happens with, American Muslims in the context of terrorism. There's just a different criteria. There's a different response in the justice system and in the political system when this happens. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and John McCain were saying that he shouldn't have been read his Miranda rights. I mean, this is something that's guaranteed by the Fifth and Sixth Amendment of the Constitution. So we can throw out the Constitution. There's no due process, throw him in Guantanamo Bay. But if he is, Dylann Roof, you can stop to get a hamburger before you bring him to jail. So there's just a really two-tier justice system that really is, from top to bottom in the American justice system, unfortunately.
And of course, when the September 11th attacks happened in New York and Washington, D.C. in 2001, a whole host of measures were put into place through the USA Patriot Act, the establishment of the Department of Homeland Security, none of which have necessarily made much of a dent in this idea of terrorism and terrorist attacks reducing. All we've done is actually increased the likelihood of terrorism through the wars that we're waging since 9/11, right? So if it didn't work, if those measures didn't work after September 11th, and it's actually quite an amazing thing that we haven't had more attacks in the United States, then why would they work after what happened in New York earlier this week?
You're absolutely right. I think that the whole war on terrorism narrative and the policies that stem from it are really just really failed. There was a report that came out from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists that said just earlier this week that $250 million has been spent every day since 9/11 on the war on terror. And what has that gotten us? A number of countries have been destroyed. Maybe a million people have died in Iraq. ISIS certainly rose from the ashes of the destruction there. So abroad, it's creating havoc. And at home, it's creating this kind of garrison state where everyone's afraid. There's this constant paranoia that there's this horde that's going to overrun us. It's causing us to spend huge amounts of energy, resources, and money on a threat that's really, it doesn't meet this level of necessity. There's just not, the threat is not there, unfortunately. Thankfully, that for us to have to do this. So it's really just a failed idea, and it hasn't worked in the past, and it's unlikely to work in the future, both at home and abroad.
Now, Paul, right from the start, Trump had come to power wooing his largely white base on this idea of ending migration to the United States from the darker nations, if you will. And he wants to, I mean, if they have their way, a lot of these forces would like to see a complete end to all legal migration, except perhaps maybe of white Europeans or Canadians. They have put forward the so-called RAISE Act. How much political hay do you think the Republicans and Trump will be able to make from the New York attack on the issue of immigration? I mean, with Trump attacking, basically blaming Charles Schumer for the truck attack by saying that the diversity lottery program was his idea, he seems to be trying to push the Democrats into a corner. And the Democrats have been doing some work to try to get the DREAM Act passed. And I'm wondering if they're going to be able to milk this attack to push the Democrats into silence and you know, bring their so-called RAISE Act to the table and end all legal migration to the U.S.
Well, I think I can't necessarily predict, but I think that this will give the Trump administration and those conservative elements in the Republican Party leverage on this topic. This is something that he's not going to stop hammering home on. This is kind of his bread and butter as far as the politics. He wants to exploit this to drive home his narrative. Whether the Democrats will buckle or give in on this, I don't think that they're going to be willing to do it completely. But they have been known to buckle a lot in the past, so it's probably not going to go into a good direction. But as I mentioned earlier, it's already extremely difficult to legally migrate to the U.S. So this is going to certainly, there's going to be long visa delays. You know, the refugees who have been waiting, you know, sometimes years to be resettled in the U.S., that's going to create more problems for them. So, I think that unfortunately we're going to see a continually restrictive immigration policy, at least as long as the Trump administration is in office. And again, I think that by and large, immigrants to the U.S. have done a lot of great things. Certainly, we've been built on immigrants, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. This is a country that people came to largely because they wanted to create something in their lives, and I think that's still the case, and that's where we should try to aim for the future, is to bring people who want to create something in their lives and make a country that is going to be innovative and doing new and exciting things.
Do you think that we can count on Trump putting his own foot in his mouth to end up, not being able to get a lot of his policy proposal passed? A lot of the legal challenges to the things that he has done have been based on things that he has said on Twitter. I mean, even just him calling openly in two separate tweets for Saipov to get the death penalty may end up saving Mr. Saipov, because a lawyer could easily argue that the man could never have gotten a fair trial after the President of the United States is calling for the death penalty.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't think that his legal strategies have been very sound. Certainly, all of his Muslim bans have been stricken down in the courts. So that's one of the things that's fortunately saving the country, is his inability to get things done legislatively, and then also just with his executive orders. So hopefully that'll keep happening, but we shouldn't count on that. I think there needs to be some resistance. I'd like to see more protests, pushing the Democrats, popular protests pushing the Democrats to, be a resistance party, not just going along to it, making backroom deals. But that's going to require, popular protests in the street and serious resistance.
Do you think that Trump and the GOP's legislative agenda will be derailed from everything that's happening? We've been covering the issue of the Mueller indictments, and now the new tax bill was just revealed. We're going to be covering that actually on our show in the coming days. But how much of what's been happening in the news over these last few days is either helping, or is it helping, or is it hindering what the GOP really wants to do, which is reward corporate donors?
Well, I think You're right, and that a lot of the stuff is kind of a show, and then behind the scenes they're basically doing all they can. They're appointing people to judicial posts and things like that. Very conservative people. They're trying to push these huge tax breaks for corporations and stuff like that. So it's important to not get distracted by the spectacle of the Trump administration, and see that the kind of Paul Ryan segment of the Trump of the Republican Party. They're very strategic, and they're trying to push these very conservative, you know, tax policies and other policies that are really going to damage the country in a serious way. So whether this will help or hurt, I can't necessarily say, but I think that it's something that we do really need to keep our eye on the ball on.
Finally, Paul, let's go back to the issue that rarely gets discussed, which is the so-called war on terror. The United States has ramped that up. You know, even when President Obama made some nominal moves towards pulling back troops after increasing them, we've just seen these wars continue and expand. Isn't this something that we should be clearly identifying as the source of terrorist attacks? These are the what the U.S. does in countries like Iraq and Syria and Yemen and Afghanistan feeds ISIS, which ends up being able to politicize young vulnerable men in Europe and the U.S.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think that any serious analyst will say that the instability caused by these wars has really allowed terrorism to really explode. The State Department figures show that there was a huge explosion of terrorism around the world after from 2002 to 2016, increased thousands of times. Different terror databases have found different numbers, but they've all fallen huge explosions of terrorism. Again, these mostly occur in and around the Middle East. They impact the West to a degree, but it's to a lesser extent. But you're absolutely right. The wars have wrought nothing but violence and destruction. I mean, I think 80% of Raqqa has been destroyed in trying to take it, successfully taking it from ISIS. West Mosul is basically in ruins. It seems that these cities are not really liberated. They're more just kind of conquered. So what happens to these dispossessed people who live there? Are they going to live the rest of their lives in camps? Are they going to be welcomed into the wider states in the region? It's yet to be seen, but I think that it's very concerning because, as you say, the roots of instability are really going to cause likely more terrorism, and that's not going to be contained only to the Middle East, though mostly it will be in the Middle East. It will impact the West as well, unfortunately.
Paul, I want to thank you so much for joining us and for spending this time with us.
Thank you very much.
My guest is Paul Gottinger, a U.S.-based journalist writing on war, civil liberties, racism, and terrorism. His work has appeared in The Daily Beast, Middle East Eye, Alternate, The Real News, and Shadowproof. We've been discussing Trump's politicization of the New York truck attack. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.